PQRST. Hello, everybody, and thanks very much to Stitch, who kicked us off this morning again and has already run outside to play. Fine, I will do the podcast without you. My faithful cat, Hopeful, is here, as ever. You can probably hear her. Oh, WC is tired this morning. He woke up at 2 o'clock because it was raining buckets in Centennial. Not raining a lot. Actual buckets were coming down. And so, of course, he had to close some open windows. And then he got to thinking. And getting to thinking at 2:30 in the morning leads to being up until 5 in the morning, it turns out. But if I had to lose sleep for thinking, at least I have a lot of fun things to think about. This is PQRST, episode 3, Parody Quips, Rants, and Storytelling. The parody will come at the end, as it always does. I'll throw in quips as I come across them, like the great one about the buckets just now. I hope you enjoyed that. And I think we'll save... I had a bit of a rant in mind, but I got a lot to talk about with the stories and the telling, so we'll save the rant for another time. I am very excited because it is currently Saturday morning, October the 3rd, and Wednesday night, October the 7th, I get to headline a comedy show for the first time ever. I will be doing an hour of comedy, which is very exciting. It's not the huge thing it might be. I was not asked to do an hour of comedy. I decided to do an hour of comedy and found a theater that would let me pay them money to rent out their space. And two other comics have come along with, and we all have made this show happen together. But nonetheless, I'm going to do an hour, and most I've ever done was 25 minutes, and that went well. That's yet another story for, I think, another time, because, like I say, a lot to talk about as far as what's going on this week. But the 25 minutes went well, and that was surprising, because I'll have to look it up, but I think I was 5 or 6 months into doing comedy at all, and for someone to get an opportunity to feature and do 25 minutes when they have been doing comedy for about 6 months is crazy. It's just unheard of as far as what I've been hearing. So anyway, great story for another time. I got to be on TV yesterday morning along with my two cohorts, Jeff Cohn and Kevin Bennett. And it was interesting to think about television, because this was not nearly the first time I had been in a TV studio. I was attending high school in Arvada, and it was the end of my junior year, and if you had asked me what I wanted to do with my life, I really had no idea. I might have said try to be a writer, because I had been at that point trying to be a writer for about 8 years, and so it was something I knew I could do. And yet another long story. I've written over 1 million words of prose and have never actually gotten anything published besides a small book series I paid to publish myself. But writing was something I did, and that was about all I had. I had like nothing. And as a junior in high school, last week or so of a junior year, the general manager of the television station around the corner from the high school came into our class, and I don't know how many classes he visited, but he came to ours, and he said they were looking for interns. And I thought, this would be fun. I'm working at King Soopers. It's okay. It's not great. It's certainly not a career choice, and so why not see about an internship at a TV station? And I got to intern at the TV station, along with two of my fellow then seniors. And unlike the other two seniors, I was able to get a job there. So my senior year, I was working at the television station. And then after I graduated, I continued working at the television station. And it's another very long story, but I have spent hundreds of hours in a television studio environment. And if you've never been on TV, I'll try to describe it to you. You have to be very, very quiet, which makes sense if you think about it, but surprises people that you're in the room, and if you're not on set, you're waiting to go on set, and if you're sitting there talking, the people that are talking on set, your voice goes into their microphones, and the people watching at home can hear you, or at least hear that something's going on that they can't see, and that's bad. So guests need to be quiet, and if they're going to talk, they have to talk very quietly and maybe go into a corner, and it's better if they don't talk. And I had many hours as a camera operator, and it was good practice for the work that I do now, not only in learning how to frame a shot and focus a shot and check iris and so forth, but also in learning that I need to try not to cough. Oh, it sucks running a camera when you have a cold. Sneezing, and the sneeze gets captured by the audio microphone on the camera, the audio microphone as opposed to the video microphone. You cough, and the microphone catches it. And if you cough and you're holding the camera, you also shake the camera. So basically, you have to stop existing while you're running a camera. And I've had a lot of practice at that. So not only did I know from TV, from being an employee at a TV station, I knew from TV because in the late 90s, I worked at the station from 96 till the end of 98, and then was back from early 02 through 2011. And in the late 90s, fortunately, they weren't doing this anymore by the time I came back. We would do staff shows every 3 or 4 months. Maybe it was every 6. It seemed like it was every other week, because staff shows were a very interesting animal. I'm not sure why we did them. I think the idea was... let me back up. This TV station was TV 41, and you know, the higher a number gets for local television, the better the programming is. But no, TV 41 was in Arvada, and what little is left of the station is not even in Arvada anymore. But at the time, it was owned by Faith Bible Chapel, and we did Christian and religious programming, and it was local. We were airing to whoever we could reach in and around Arvada, into some of Denver. I think if you got as far as, say, Centennial or Highlands Ranch, you couldn't actually pull in the signal. So it was not a wide-reaching signal. And if everybody within our signal was watching, we might have had a million viewers. And I can guarantee, I can't guarantee, I'm relatively certain, though, that we never had 0.1% of a million viewers. If we had a couple hundred people watching, that was actually pretty cool. So the fact that I was on TV a number of times in the late 90s is not at all impressive, except for the experience that I got, because being on TV is being on TV. It is so very different than any other stage performance. I think the only thing that it can compare to is being on radio. And with radio, at least, people can call in and you can talk to people. And of course, when you're doing TV, there's whoever you're interviewing at the time. But call-ins for TV don't tend to work really well. And so what you get with being on television is basically no chance to know how you're playing with the audience. And if you've done any speaking, you know, knowing how the audience is reacting is very, very important. Whatever kind of speaking you're doing, stand-up comedy, TED Talk, Sunday morning sermon, whatever it is, be it very, very extremely serious or, hey, watch me with my ventriloquist dummy crazy, whatever it is, if you don't know how the audience is reacting, you are missing a lot of information. It's like skydiving with your eyes closed. Maybe you've got something on your wrist that'll beep to tell you to open the parachute, but it's a lot better if you can actually see the ground coming up, I figure. And so I got to do, because everybody kind of had to be in on these, I got to do staff shows. And the staff shows were crazy. We would, those of us that worked there, be it secretary or camera guy or editor or whatever, would sit on the couches and the hosts would interview us, and we might talk about what was going on in our lives. We might talk about what programming we were doing at the station. We might answer letters. I don't even remember. I just remember that it wasn't really great TV. Maybe it was fun for people in the community to see, hey, these are the people working at the TV station in my community. But it just wasn't really great television. And it was also, when I say crazy, part of the reason it was crazy is the people that are supposed to be making the show are on the show. And so you would have, the moments where, like, I, as the camera guy, am on set, and the director would call for the camera to move and realize that he had to send a cameraman from camera 3 over to camera 2 to move it because the guy running camera 2 was on set. Or you'd have the usual assistant director acting as director because the director was on set. And then as soon as we went to our, we didn't have commercials, we had PSAs, public service announcements. But you'd go to a quote-unquote commercial, and the director would race off the set and down the hallway so that he could direct, she could direct by the time we got back from break. It was crazy, but I got experience being on television, which means playing to a big, round, black circle and not knowing if your jokes are landing, not knowing if people are listening to you, and had no idea at the time that that would ever matter to my life. It was cool. The first time I got to say, hey, I was on television. That's cool. If you get to say that, you know, it's something a lot of people have not done and everybody knows about and probably has thought about a little bit. So there's a coolness aspect to it. It got old quickly. Had no idea how it might affect my later life, even as I had no idea how being able to frame a shot and focus a shot and iris a shot would affect my later life. Now that I have a videography business and make videos for a living, because God is so good, I get to do something I love for a living, and that is an enormous blessing. So I had TV experience just randomly, if you believe in random chance, which I don't, I believe that God arranges things, I randomly lucked into TV experience, and then some years later, couple years ago, I hadn't been on TV in ages because, as I said, when I came back to working at the TV station in the aughts, we weren't doing staff shows anymore. There might have been something where I got on. My memory's not fantastic. If there was, it wasn't anything like too special, in my opinion. I'd forgotten all about this, or maybe I blocked it from my memory. The very first time I ever tried stand-up, I tell people the first time I did stand-up was late 2011. And that was the first, well, it's not the first time. I had forgotten about the first time because, well, it's the first time I did stand-up where there was an audience and not the black TV camera lenses, so we'll count it as the first time. The very first time, though, that I wrote jokes and did them in the hopes that people would laugh, we had a lot of time to kill at the TV station because there were not a lot of programs needed filming besides the live one we did 4 or 5 days a week. But that was just an hour in the morning, and it took all morning to get it ready and do it, but nothing to do in the afternoon, but what we could for the next day's show. So we were thinking about, what can we do? We've got this studio, we've got cameras, we've got the time, and we were trying to come up with some kind of locally created show, something we could do in-house. And ideas were tossed around. The only segment I'm aware of that was ever actually recorded was mine, which was my idea to basically rip off the Saturday Night Live news sketch, you know, Weekend Update. And this is on YouTube. If you want, you can go to you can go search WC the Comedian and look for, I forget what I called it, but something to the effect of, oh my gosh, this is terrible. It's the first time I did stand-up. I'm 18 and absolutely terrified. People that have seen it recently said, oh, I couldn't tell you were terrified. Trust me, I was just terrified. And I don't get scared on stage, and I don't recall ever being scared to be on TV, except for that one time. Maybe I thought it wasn't funny, I don't know. But I had written some jokes. I wrote a joke making fun of Titanic, I wrote a joke making fun of Godzilla, the movie had just come out, both of them had. They're not great jokes, but, you know, for being 18 and taking a first stab at writing comedy, it's not bad. And so I did this weekend update segment, and they were going to edit in, you know, shots of things over my shoulder that I was talking about. And we had all this going. You know, we tried to put some production value into it. And besides the people that helped me record it, nobody else ever saw it, I don't think. And nothing ever came of the show we were going to create. But a friend of mine who works, still does work at the TV station, which is now just a satellite station for a worldwide network, ran across the tape that we had made and sent it to me. And I made it into digital, turned it into a digital format and put it on YouTube. And it's fun to look back and just see the terror in my eyes and think, if anybody had told me at 18, hey, listen, October 7th of 2015, you're going to headline and do an hour, I probably would not have believed them. So yeah, that was the one time I was terrified to be on TV. And that was the first time that I ever did stand-up. And it was a dumb way to start doing stand-up, because when you don't have an audience, you don't know how you're doing. And the folks, you know, the couple folks behind the camera and in the booth after it was done, because you can't laugh, you really shouldn't laugh even while you're recording, because, you know, listening to somebody do comedy, like if you're watching Weekend Update's not the best example, they have a live audience. And so many TV shows try to get a live audience, be it The View or Oprah or Big Bang Theory or whatever. If you can have actual live bodies there that can give you a reaction, it feeds the comedy. That's why, in my opinion, television is harder than being on stage. Sure, you can reach ever so many more people, but if you don't have somebody reacting, you're missing a huge element. So this show that we're doing next Wednesday, we're trying to sell it out. We want every seat filled, partially because the more people buy tickets, the more money us comics will make from the show. But even if you know, we weren't going to make any money, if I was doing this for free, whatever, I would still want as many people as possible to be there, because the more people are there, the more people, if the jokes are funny, if people are having fun, the more people are having fun, the better the reaction, the better it just builds on itself. It's a wonderful chain reaction. It's early in the morning, so my voice is still finding itself. I sound like I'm a smoker. Or maybe I sound like the $6 million man. Yeah, it really is early in the morning. Yes, I sound like Lee Majors right now. Anyway, the audience is having fun. Comic has more fun. The audience then has more fun. It's a wonderful feedback kind of loop that can build on itself. And when you're talking to the round black lenses and the cameramen behind the lenses are not, or women, you know, are not supposed to laugh, everybody that helped me make the segment was very kind and complimentary and said it was funny. But it was terrible to be out there throwing jokes at a silent wall. Now that I think about it, I would say that it was even worse than, you know, the open mics I've done where nobody laughed. Because at least, even in those situations, the audience wanted to laugh. They might not have thought I was funny, but I have yet to, in my limited experience, it's probably ahead of me somewhere, I've yet to lose an audience. When an audience just mentally or physically just kind of tunes you out, they're like, okay, I'm going to play Candy Crush and wait for the next guy, or think about leaving because I'm not with this anymore. I don't know that I've ever experienced that. And I'm guessing that not being sure that I've experienced it means I probably have not. I have a feeling it's a very obvious thing when it happens. With these black lenses that I keep going back to, you don't know if they're paying attention. You don't know if it's working. There's nothing to feed off. So TV comedy, not the greatest thing in the world unless there's a studio audience. But the experience was great. And anyway, I've been telling this story for 20 minutes now to say that yesterday the Pope, God bless him, did not preempt us comics like he did last week. Although we're waiting for our interview, which was at the very tail end of the hour-long show, and the floor director said, listen, it's possible the president might need to break in with a speech, so just so you know, you guys might be cut off. And that's almost, it was almost a blessing. A, we were not cut off. We got to go right through to the end of the show. But two, the fact that we might be cut off at any moment, at least for me, just like, you know what? That took care of any anxiety I had about this interview. Just be loose, relax, have fun with it. It may not get on air anyway. And we did have fun with it. Sitting next to Kevin Bennett and Jeff Cohn. And fortunately, I had TV experience because I had to put on my own mic. Nobody offered to help me. And Kevin, we were about 10 seconds from being on the air, and nobody had helped him either. And so I was like, here, put your mic on. Yeah. The crew was not having the best day. We had a fun interview, and we got to make the host laugh. And Denise Plant is the host of Colorado and Company, and she's fantastic. She's also on Cozy. I was going to say KOA, but that's AM. She's on Cozy in the mornings, so she's an old pro. She's not old. She's a young pro. She'll never hear this. I'm not going to get in trouble. But fantastic host, and this was the third time I had gotten the privilege of being on Colorado and Company, and it's been fun. It's just a strange experience, walking into and then out of a TV studio. It's like walking into a very different world. So yes, I was on TV yesterday. The interview is on my YouTube channel. Yay for that. But we went on TV. This is a rambling story. My wife is right. I do tell rambling stories. Oh. We went on TV to promote the show next Wednesday. And that's the other thing I wanted to talk about and why I didn't bother with a rant this morning. Though I didn't think it would take me 20 minutes to say, hey, I was on TV yesterday. I'm very, very excited about the show next Wednesday. I have been working very hard. I started writing jokes the hour that I'm going to be doing. Roughly 30% of it is, it's the last 30%, the last 20 minutes of my my hour, is my best material, which of course it would be. You save your best for last, and this is the stuff, the A stuff that I have that has worked and worked well. It was the way I closed out the first time I did 25 minutes. And so I'm looking forward to that. It's not that it's guaranteed to work with every audience, but unless I've completely lost them by the time I get to it, God forbid that happens, we're going to have a great time. It's fun stuff. It's funny stuff. Sometimes jokes write themselves, not as often as I would like, but there are times where it's like, I have to grab a pen and paper right now and get this down. This is fantastic. And it is. And I give credit to God for that stuff. The really good stuff is what he feeds me. And this is some of the really good stuff. Anyway, that's the last 30%. The other 60... 100 minus 30. The other 70%. Oh, math. Is basically new. I've been writing stuff since January. So for... math again. January, February, April, March, June, July, August, September. For 9 months, I have been writing comedy and going up at open mics, going up at Comedy Works, going up where I could get time, and pitching this stuff, trying to figure out what works, what doesn't. And as I may have talked about last week, I don't remember, repeating myself is going to happen. Just a heads up if you want to be a long-range listener to this fabulous podcast. And then there's moments where I forgot what I was going to say. This is live. It's not Memorex. It's really live. Right. When I write comedy... Sometimes... There we go. Sometimes when I... the first time a joke hits an audience... You don't know it's funny until an audience has heard it, whether or not they respond. Doing stuff, I know I've talked about this, doing stuff to the bathroom mirror and doing stuff to an audience that's not responding, it sounds like it's exactly the same, it's worlds different. And so that's why open mics can be great. If a person can stomach the fact that I'm going to go up there, give them 4 minutes wrenched from my heart, and they are not going to care, because sometimes they don't, but it's still valuable. Because when a joke has hit an audience and bounced back to my ears, I get a better sense of whether or not it has any potential. Everything I write down makes me laugh. Of course, if I was to write something down as a joke that I didn't find funny, I would be crazy. But half of the stuff that I write is only funny to me, maybe to my wife, maybe to a couple of close friends who really, really get Simpsons references, but not to the world at large. And I've tried to cut out the ones that are like, yeah, that is funny, but it's only going to be funny to me and my wife and the Simpsons friends. But they slip through. And there are things that are funny, but are not for me. And sometimes I don't realize it until it's bounced off an audience. I've been writing superhero jokes with the hope of getting on stage at Comic-Con. And I have no contacts. It's completely a cold sell, but I'm hoping if I can pull stuff together that's good enough, that's really, really funny, that I can pitch it at somebody at Comic-Con, and they'll say, sure, we can manage to squeeze you into onto a stage. And the first set that I wrote, the 15 minutes I came up with for superheroes, I had some jokes about the Batmobile, and I thought they were pretty funny. And then I did them, and I'm like, I'm not sure if it's funny, but I am sure that that doesn't work with my voice. And I don't mean my physical voice, like I'm trying to sing a song that's out of my range. What I mean is Emo Phillips and Drew Carey and Janine Garofalo are all comics, or all have all done stand-up comedy. But each one has a very distinct voice. And a joke that works for Drew Carey won't work for Emo Phillips. A joke that works for Janine Garofalo won't work for Roseanne Barr. and the comic, each comic needs to find their own voice, their own style, their own way of telling jokes. And, you know, it's arguably Brian Regan is like Jim Gaffigan. They have some similarities, but they're both very different at the same time. Jeff Foxworthy and Bill Ingvald, similar background, similar parts of the country. And they tell similar jokes, but they still have a unique voice, and each comic has to find their own. And so jokes that come out, like, well, that's not my voice. And if it's not my voice, I can't pull it off. And it would be foolish to try. I don't care how funny it is. And sometimes I write jokes, and it's like, wow, I think that's pretty funny, and this comic, you know, Kevin Bennett might be able to do wonders with that. This might be great for Heath Arthur. Jeff Cohn and I talk about comedy a lot, and we feed each other jokes. We come up with stuff and say, hey, what about this? And we're starting to get to know each other's voice better as we work together and see each other do comedy, which is fun. One of the fun things about comedy is sharing it with other comics. So, I've been talking about, though, the show next Wednesday and how I've been working for 9 months to write material and pitching it at audiences and rewriting the superhero stuff, which right now it's maybe a 12-minute set. Add in the parody song that I'm going to bless you with at the end of this podcast. The parody song, it's maybe 15. I have rewritten that 15 minutes so many times. There were Green Lantern jokes that I've pulled out. There were Batmobile jokes that I, at this time, have thrown out. It's like, no, I don't think. Some of the stuff I've written, I think, would really hit at Comic-Con. But if you don't know from superheroes, I'd have to explain it. And one thing that is universally true about humor, if you have to explain it, it's not funny. So I've got a bunch of stuff that I hope I get time at Comic-Con, because fellow comic book nerds would love it. And the general public would have no idea what I was talking about. Which is the other fun thing about the reason I really wanted to do superhero stuff in this show. Part of the point of doing the show, as well as just I want to bless the people that come to watch, I really do, and we want to have, you know, a good time with that audience. We're going to record the show. I'm going to have 5 video cameras running, and post-show, each of us 3 comics will have a professional recording of whatever we manage to come up with. And so I'm putting my best comic book joke foot forward. That was a clunky sentence. Well done. I'm putting my best foot forward with comic book jokes to show whoever I might be able to get the ear of at Comic-Con, this is what I can do. And so it's an interesting line to walk, because I want the jokes to be funny and I want the jokes to be Comic-Con funny. But if I throw out the stuff, if I'm telling the jokes that only comic nerds would laugh at, nobody in the audience is going to laugh, and so it'll sound like I'm not funny. But if I just do the very general, everybody will get this, somebody at Comic-Con might say, okay, but those are very general jokes, and, you know, so what? We need stuff for comic book nerds. So I'm trying to walk that line. Maybe encourage the not comic book nerd audience, you know, stretch them a little bit, see if I can get them to the laugh. Not on a lot of, in a couple of cases. And this is the sort of thing that I think about when I'm writing comedy. And I think a lot of stand-ups would agree. They work this kind of hard at what's really funny, where is it going. It's not just, you know, oh, hey, yesterday I saw a duck with a tiara or something, and, you know, writing down random one jokes here. Some comics seem to. They'll do 5 minutes, and in 5 minutes they'll talk about 100 things. If I have a 5-minute set, I'm probably going to stick to one topic, be it superheroes or ninjas or marriage or junk food or whatever, and find, you know, what can I find that's funny about junk food and give it 5 minutes. I was talking to a comic yesterday who is farther along than I, and I had mentioned to him that I wasn't sure I could keep an audience for an hour, and he misunderstood me to say I wasn't sure that I could come up with an hour of comedy. And he told me how the first time he did 45 minutes, he had like 200 subjects, and that every minute or two, well, 45 minutes with 200 subjects, every 30 seconds or so, he's switching topics. And that's something I'm not worried about. I have three 20-minute topics, give or take a couple minutes. The first set, or first section, is pop music, jokes about pop music. The second section is my superhero stuff. And the third section is my salute to Broadway. And I thought about it after I talked to him. And even if I look at each bit individually, like the superhero segment, the opening bit is about how I'm a comic book nerd, and then there's a bit about why Batman is the best superhero, and then there's a bit about utility belts and the bat signal, and there's a bit about Wonder Woman, and a couple bits about Superman. All the bits in the hour that I've prepared, I got, when I counted them all up, maybe 16. And if you include the three parody songs, two of which you've already heard if you listened to the first two episodes of this podcast, then it's 19. Call it 20 bits in an hour, or a bit every 3 minutes. And that's how I write comedy. I'm not saying it's the way it's supposed to be done, because I'm kind of working in a vacuum. I can talk to artists, talk to other comics about how they write, and I certainly, as I would encourage anyone who wants to do comedy to do, I go to open mics, go to showcases, and, you know, praise God for Netflix and Hulu and YouTube. I watch other comics, and it's, which is great. One, it allows me to, like I told the joke, not the joke, I told the story about, last week, told about how Billy Crystal had written and done on Saturday Night Live in 1976, a couple years before I was born, this joke that I had come up with independently, but then scrapped because it's like, oh, well, I guess I can write a joke worthy of Billy Crystal, but he's done it, so we're going to take that out of the word file. It's great to watch other comics because you can find out if somebody's already gotten to a punchline that you have come up with. Because, I mean, A, don't steal jokes. You don't get away with it. People are going to catch you at it. But two, it's not stealing if, you know, the fact that Billy Crystal and I both came up with "my mom introduces me as being 430 months old. We both came up with that independently. I hadn't heard him do it and then decided to write it as my own. But there are plenty of jokes out there that are for the taking. Anybody could pick this up off the ground or off, you know, low-hanging fruit, they're called. And if someone else has gotten to it, they got to it, you got to let it go. The other benefit of watching other comics, see how they're doing it. Both the ones that are good and the ones that suck. It is very, very valuable to watch a comic who is totally bombing, who's really just losing an audience, being heckled, whatever. Because what are they, comics that are great, what are they doing right? Comics that are terrible, what are they doing wrong? And both can be learned from. Even as you learn a lot from a set, I've learned a lot from sets where I went out and did not get laughter. More, perhaps, than sets where people really had a great time. I hope next Wednesday night is one of those, oh man, everybody had a really great time. I even feel I killed it a little bit. Darn, I'm not going to learn anything. I'd rather have that. But if next Wednesday night sucks, I really hope it doesn't. We've put a lot of work into this. I've put a lot of work into this. But if it's a bad show, if I come, and half the audience, I think, is going to be people who love me. And who want to like me, and who will, you know, I'd have to really work at it to turn at least that half of the audience away. But, you know, if it may be a bad show, and I give myself permission to fail at this, and it's okay if next Wednesday night I totally tank, and, you know, come off stage and go, wow, so I was not ready for this. If that's the experience, that's not what I want, and it won't feel good, and it'll not feel good for probably a couple of weeks, but eventually I will be able to get over that it went badly and learn from it. Say, okay, next time, what do we do differently? What can I take from this? And while I prefer those experiences to come in short 3 or 4 minute bursts, the sets where you really do badly are the ones where you learn. So they are valuable, even though I've never met anyone who wanted to have that experience. Yeah, I've forgotten how I got into that. Yeah, I'm trying not to edit this, but as I've totally lost my train of thought, I will cut out the silence in between the end of this sentence and the beginning of the next one. Well, the last thing that I can recall deliberately talking about was the writing process, that I have about 20 bits, and that's just how I write. I think that was what I was talking about, that I can't speak for other writers. And I watch other comics, try to learn what they do, but watching Jim Gaffigan, watching Jeff Dunham, watching comics that I love, for that matter, watching comics I don't like, because there's certainly plenty of those, doesn't tell me anything about their writing process. I have learned a little bit about the writing process. I watched Last Comic Standing some years back, the one that had Ralphie May and Dat Phan. And as I recall, they made fun of Dat Phan. He had a piece of paper, and he knew how long it would take to get to each joke. He had everything mapped out. And I recall the comics laughing at him, like, oh, you know, he's Asian, that's how they do this. I can tell you pretty much how long each bit's going to go. I mean, I've built this set into an hour, and I can tell you how long the set's going to go. There are factors, of course, that I can't control, one of which being the audience's reaction. If I get more laughter than I'm expecting, A, that's fantastic, and two, I might go a little longer than an hour if I do all my jokes, but I'm not planning on taking a watch on stage or asking anybody to light me, which is what they do to let you know, hey, listen, your time is almost up. Partly because I'm the headliner and I can go a little long, but I want to respect the time of the people that have showed up at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday to get them out as soon after 9 as possible. But I'm not planning on watching a clock or having anyone watch a clock for me, because almost every day for over a month I've been running the whole show, and I'm averaging 53 to 55 minutes every time I do it, and I figure if I need an extra 10% for laughter, because I'm not pausing between jokes. I pause a second or two and then do the next joke when I practice. But hopefully, God willing, some of these jokes I'll need to pause for longer than that for people to stop laughing. So I allow for 10% extra time to be laughs. And after 55 minutes, an extra 10% is another 5 minutes, and there's an hour-long show. And that's the process. That's, for me anyway, the process. I can't speak for other comics, but... And it... I think I get a little too tied to the way that I want to do it. I think, you know, if I can figure out a framework for this, if I can fit it into the comedy box that I believe I understand, then it'll be funny. And the problem with that, it's good to be able to hit your time. Aspiring comics, if you have 3 minutes somewhere, do 3 minutes. I don't think anyone is upset if they have to cut off your mic. But I do know that if they cut off your mic and you keep going more than to maybe finish the joke you were in the middle of, that's not okay. And nobody is happy with you about that. And I do believe that if you can know your time and come to a good end within about 5 to 10 seconds of the time you've been allotted, that, I don't know, for me, that smacks of professionalism. I see that and I see somebody who is really trying to be a professional comic. If you have 3 minutes and you're done after a minute 15, that's way too early. And if you have 3 minutes and you don't stop when they cut your mic, that's way too late. So it's good to be able to hit a mark. And it's also good to have things kind of worked out. Again, this is what works for me and wouldn't work. I know there are comics who have nothing planned and get up and just start from scratch and make it work. And that can be very, very exciting when it works. The problem is that's also very risky, because if it doesn't work, 3 minutes can be a very long time. I was part of a contest with Comedy Works, the New Faces contest. And one of the comics who was up the same night that I was, and this was actually cool because he came clean about it to the audience. It was the first time for him ever doing comedy from that stage. And as I was talking to him backstage, it might have been the first time he did comedy anywhere ever. And power to him. That was a pretty gutsy thing to do. But he got up on stage and he's like, okay, so I have 5 minutes and I just forgot everything that I was going to say, which is a nightmare. I mean, people being afraid of public speaking, I think that's what they think will happen, and it's not unknown. But what was cool with this guy, and I wish I'd remembered his name, because I would love to give him a shout out and say his name, because he rolled with it, and I was hugely impressed at that. He's like, I forgot what I was going to say, so we'll fill this 5 minutes together. How are you doing? And it wasn't great. There was no way it was going to be great. It was his first time and he forgot what he was going to say. But nobody would have blamed him if he'd said, I forgot what I was going to say, I'm really sorry, and walked off. That would have been unfortunate, but I think everybody would have understood doing that. I don't think anyone would have been upset with him. I certainly would not have been. I could understand that. But he rolled with it. And they actually had to cut his mic because he came up with some jokes on the spot. He did some crowd work. It was clunky. It was not great. But considering the handicap of I've never done comedy and I don't have any comedy to give you, he really did a great job. You know, he made an apple pie out of a couple of spoons and a Ziploc bag. And it was a terrible apple pie, but he still made one, is what I'm saying. And there are comics who... Another rabbit trail. Are you enjoying the rabbit trails? I hope you are. Because there's going to be a lot of them, if you haven't figured that out already. There are comics who get up and have nothing planned and just riff off the audience. And I imagine that takes a lot of practice to get to the point where you can do that. Where I'm at now is I'm trying to let go of my set list. I will figure out what you know, if I've got 5 minutes, I'll figure out what topic I want to talk about. I'll find the jokes that fit in that time. I'll make them as good as I can. I'll practice them over and 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 a few hundred more overs again, so that I don't have to take a notebook on stage. I don't have to stop and think, okay, what joke comes next? I want to have it burned into my brain what joke comes next. And that is not a bad thing. But what the downside to that, the downside to being a comic who has nothing prepared is that if you can't get anything from the audience, if nothing comes up, you don't have anything to go to. The downside to being super hyper extra prepared is it's very easy to get in my head. It's very easy to forget, hey, I'm trying to have fun. If I'm having fun, the audience will be having fun. It's very easy for it to become, you know, third grade speech meet. I cannot go to school today, said little Annie, whatever. You know, that yes, I have this whole thing memorized and I'm going to recite it and you are going to sit there and listen. And a comic who is not paying attention to the audience because they're like, okay, this is the next joke, and then there's the next joke, and then there's the next joke, that's bad too. So my challenge lately, not only to slow down when I'm doing comedy and also leave a moment for an audience to laugh. You see how I left a moment there? That was on purpose. The thing I really am working on right now is getting out of my head, which is why this podcast is valuable. I am not going to be embarrassed about the many rabbit trails in this very recording, because rather than being in my head, I'm not writing down. The normal me would come to this recording with a list of, okay, I'm going to talk about this for 5 minutes, then I'm going to talk about this for 5 minutes, then I think I can do 10 minutes on this. What I'm doing instead is, you know, I'll have a rant in mind, I'll have a story to tell, and that's it. And it's good for me. It may not make for quality listening, I'm not sure, but this is really valuable for me to get out of my head and see where a story goes and see what jokes I find along the way as I'm telling that story and realize that the last thing I want to do is forget about the crowd. And I can take a moment away from, you know, between the joke about Superman, my joke about Jewish Superman that comes right before the joke about the smarmy Superman. And if you come to Wednesday night's show October 7th, or if you watch the video that by now is probably on YouTube, WC the Comedian, you can hear what the heck I'm talking about. It might be a great idea to take a moment between the Jewish Superman joke and the smarmy Superman joke and play with the crowd for a second. You know, if I throw out a joke and it doesn't land, I don't have to quickly go to the next joke. I could say, yeah, you're right, that wasn't funny. Or, nobody here has ever heard of Superman? Something. You know, but acknowledge the audience. The crowd is there, they came to see me, and I don't want to ignore them. Talking about my process, a little bit about how I write and how I try to throw things at an audience, I can get out of balance in being too glued to the set that I've prepared. And I make the set as good as I can. I'm doing everything I can before I hit the stage to be polished, to be ready, to have everything memorized. But the point of that is not to then ensure that I don't lose it, although that was the point initially, and that's why I did this. I need to let go of that. I need to allow myself to fail. I need to let myself be free to bomb on stage, to lose the thread, to forget the next joke. Because if I can let go of having to do it perfectly, which is something I struggle with every day, then I am going to be more free to be in the moment. And what's the crowd doing? Can I make fun of myself off that last joke? Can I completely change subjects? Can I ask them, you know, what's your favorite superhero? And have fun with whatever they answer. I have yet to ever do that. And the idea scares me a little bit. Public speaking doesn't scare me, but throwing the comedy open to audience participation does. And it may not be something I do a lot. There are comics that crowd work is what they do. I'm not going to become one of those anytime soon, probably ever. But I need to know the crowd is out there. I need to remember the crowd is out there. And Wednesday night, I hope to do that. I have a path I want to walk, and I want to bring them with me, but we can turn aside occasionally. If it serves the show, if it makes people laugh, if it makes for a better night for those that have given up their Wednesday evening and are going to get less sleep, perhaps, than they would to come out and see this, I really want to show them a good time. So, very excited about Wednesday. And, wow, closing in on an hour, so I look forward to next week's podcast where I get to tell you how Wednesday night went. That one probably will be quite a bit of time, too, because I have a feeling I'll have lots of stories to tell. But everyone out there listening, it means so much to me that you would listen. And I'm going to bless you in return with a little music. Give me just a second. All right, so I have moved over to the piano. If you're anything like me, you are a completist perfectionist with apparently some obsessive-compulsive tendencies, and so you've listened all the way through the other two podcasts. And if you listened all the way through the other two podcasts, you got to hear the first two Beatles parody songs that I'm going to do at this show coming up Wednesday, October 7th. And this one that you're about to hear is the third and final piano song from that show. A bit of a superhero medley. Peter Parker's Spider-Man, living in his Spider-Land, making all his spider plans for Spider-Buddy. It'll work for now. His secret identity, only known to you and me. Spider sense, can you see me at all? Spider-Man, have pity, they're attacking the city. Green Goblin has taken Aunt May and Mary Jane, saving lives across the land. Does what all a spider can. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Dear sir or madam, are you sitting down? I got a project here making all the rounds. My mom says I can't live in the basement no more. I really need a job and I wanna be a comic book writer. Comic book writer. Got a superhero and his name is Jim. He wears a cape and mask, no one knows it's him. He's got x-ray vision and can maybe fly. I've never kissed a girl, but I wanna be a comic book writer. Comic book writer. Lois Lane has gotten kidnapped once again. Jimmy Olsen's watch is signaling, I'll bet it's Brainiac. Now Lois Lane is a reporter for the newspaper. She's always looking for a scoop to her career. But Lois never ever feels no fear. Superman is near. Lexi Luthor is a businessman with lots of power. The little children laugh at him because he's bald. So Luthor has all of those children's skulls dead in his basement lair. So unfair. Lois Lane can't tell Clark Kent is Superman. Yet I still remain her biggest fan. Lois Lane. And that's going to do it for today's PQRST. Thanks so much for listening. You know I appreciate you. And I hope you also know that everybody matters, including and especially you. So I will see you when I see you, and you'll hear me, hopefully in about a week. And in the meantime, own your stage, whatever stage that might be. And
That way we'll both be making the world a better place. Till then.